Someone once said about a friend, "He never makes the same mistake twice, but I think he's made them all once now." And a million tiny little sins can pile up until they've got you imprisoned. How do we escape? Is there an escape? A way out? Stay tuned. Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to a Friday broadcast here on the Voice of Prophecy. This is Kenneth Richards, along with Lonnie Melashenko, for our week-long series, The Nail, The Shoe, The Horse, The War. And we have a wonderful gift book for each listener, absolutely free. So have a pen or pencil ready in just a few minutes. But first, let's join Lonnie for today's message. Escape from the spider web.
Thanks, Kenneth. Well, it's Friday. And on Friday, we're supposed to get out of all the messes we've created with our word pictures all week long. Here on the Voice of Prophecy, Friday's the day that there'd better be some answers. For the past 4 days, we've talked about the raw cumulative power of little sins, one thread at a time, one new spider web strand a day. Even the tiniest of transgressions can take on the kind of strength that can tie a strong man down and push his face in the dirt. Now, what's more, the enemy of this world has a specific plan to capture each of us with little sins. He'll poison us with a million little mosquito bites if we'd let him. So, how do we escape? True, maybe the current taking us toward the devil's Disneyland is so gentle, such a quietly whispered flow. But we want out. We want to be rescued. We don't want to be overcome by big sins or little ones. So what can we do? Well, the Bible promises that God will intervene if we ask. I like the guarantee that Jesus himself shared with his followers as recorded in John 14. Here it is. If you love me, you will obey what I command. Well, what does that have to do with anything you ask? Pastor Lonnie, that sounds more like a command than a promise. True, it is a command. In fact, one of the Bible's most important ones. And yet, for those who honestly do love Jesus Christ, it's also a promise. You will obey, Jesus promises. In my strength and power, you can do it, and you will do it. I'll be right there to help you. Here's a story I love, found in Stephen Mosley's book, There I Go Again, How to Keep from Falling for the Same Old Sin. Now, that's a long title, isn't it? And perfectly appropriate to our Friday discussion. In Chapter 3, entitled, A Self with Wits to Fight, Stephen tells the story of Fred, a young 60s junkie serving time in prison. Now, Fred had been through the drug wars a million times. He'd been up and down, on drugs, off drugs, a vicious roller coaster ride. But he couldn't lick his habit. No way. It had started out small, as we've explored all week. But now he had a heroin habit that had him by the throat. He was trying to get his act together with Jesus Christ, reading his little Bible each day there in his cell. But then one day the prison grapevine began to buzz quietly with the news. Manny, his buddy, had a shipment of heroin coming in that afternoon. His wife was going to smuggle it in during visiting hours. And yes, there'd be plenty of stuff for everyone, especially for Fred. A visit to White Powder Heaven was just hours away. And in his heart, Fred knew he was sunk. He was too weak to resist. Even with his new faith, it just wasn't enough. All the old urges built up by a million shots of heroin, a million moments of surrender, there was no way out. He knew it. He had lunch, not really hearing the clatter of the dishes and the rumble of convicts' conversations. Inside he felt all torn up, pulled in two directions. He wanted the heroin, but he didn't want it. But deep inside he knew he did. He was going to do it. There was no way of escape. He stopped by the chapel service, but that didn't help. Then back to his cell where he lay down on the top bunk. He pulled out that little Bible of his and tried to read some more in the Gospel of John, but just kept thinking about all that heroin coming in. And then he fell asleep. Hours later, he woke up, and there were all of his buddies there in the cell. And they were all stoned, all glazed over. Man, that was good stuff, just like old times. That kind of thing. Everybody was high. What's going on, you guys? He asked. And his friend Manny looked up at him. Oh, wow, man, aren't you loaded? I thought you were coasting, dude. No, Fred responded. I guess I fell asleep. And his friend said, Oh, man, I guess we forgot about you. Sorry, Fred. We all got loaded and just forgot. And Fred realized with a chill that God had stepped in and literally put him to sleep. He didn't usually sleep in the daytime, but God had actively intervened to rescue him. Now the heroin was gone, the temptation was removed, and he actually felt a sense of relief. God had done it. But then, all of a sudden, another convict in the corner, another man feeling no pain, spoke up, Hey, Fred, there's still a real good wet cotton. Apparently, after all the shooting up that had happened, there was still a large ball of wet cotton saturated with leftover heroin. Now, you couldn't get completely high on it, but all the men knew that a wet cotton would give you a pretty decent rush, and this friend said to him, Here's some cotton, Fred. It's yours, man. And there was the temptation, front and center, again. In fact, in a way, this was harder. It wasn't a full-fledged sin, a straight-into-the-veins shot of heroin. This was just a sniff of cotton, a baby trip. So, compromising, selling out to the urge, was even easier. All at once, though, Fred felt a rush of God's presence. After all, God had stepped in to give him that nap during his toughest moment. God cared about him. God was on his side, helping him to obey, just as we read in the book of John a moment ago. And somehow, some way, Fred heard himself say to this man, his friend, No, man, I don't want it. I don't want that cotton. And all the guys stared at him. Fred, turning down a free drug ride? And then Fred heard himself say this as well. I'll never shoot it up again. Never. I'd rather die than stick a needle in my arm ever again. Somehow sensing that God would help him obey gave him a whole new feeling of strength. Not his own strength, but strength from heaven. Now, friend, I'll be the first to say that it doesn't happen that way every time. Not every rescue is that dramatic. But whatever my problem with sin is, whatever your sin problem is, God does indeed have a plan, a way to rescue you. If you ask him, he will do it. Maybe your challenge is a long-standing one, a sin pattern that runs from the Eisenhower administration right to this very Friday as you're listening, a compulsive thirst for more material things, let's say. You're driven to earn money, more money. You're addicted to shopping trips. Every weekend you buy things you don't need. Your house has been remodeled to death. Your credit cards are maxed out. You're running deficits every single month. But you just can't stop. And God leads you to realize that you're bound up in a clear violation of the very first commandment. You do have another God besides him. It's green with a picture of George Washington on the front of it, and you're trying to collect 1 million of them. And friend, you're powerless to stop. You've been chasing the rainbow for 40 years. Earning and spending has been your life. Frankly, you don't really even want to stop. You like the way you're living. But you do also want to serve the Lord. You want to be his, too. So what do you do with this long-term helplessness? Ah, you do what our friend Fred did. You call upon God. Admit your helplessness. Admit how much you love the frantic chase, the spending, the feeling of trying those new clothes and buying that new car or 100-disc CD changer. Admit it. Cast your helplessness at his feet and say, Lord, if anything's going to happen, you're going to have to make it happen. I'm powerless with this sin. In fact, I like this sin. And you know something? The Lord will hear that prayer. A man named David, who knew something about overwhelming sin and the fear that comes from spiritual defeat, wrote this in his 34th Psalm. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Over in the book of Jonah, chapter 2, there's a bit of soggy penmanship from a man who is pretty much helpless too. Inside the belly of a fairly sizable fish, Jonah didn't have many options open to him, really just the one. Let's try to digest what he had to say. In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You know, friends, some of the things the Lord has had to break me of have been pretty hard. I've gotten emotionally banged up during some of his rescues. I could still show you the bruises on my psyche. But I can tell you, as one friend to another, just as David and Jonah also testify, if I'm willing to call on him, he does answer every single time. I've discovered that the Bible's promises regarding this matter are true and always true. And God is so patient, because we feel like such complete and utter fools when we're overcome by a tidal wave of little sins. But always he loves and accepts us with open arms. A dollar at a time, the prodigal son wasted his dad's money on a million stupid little sins. But when he came to his senses, Dad was waiting with open arms. Friends, that's how it still is in the year 1996.
That's absolutely true, friend. God always is eager to come and save his children. As Lonnie said the other day, his rescue helicopters are already warmed up. Remember, we have a complimentary copy of our radio broadcast book, An Insider's Guide to the Kingdom, by Lonnie and the writer-producer of our Sunday program, John McClarty. For your free copy, send us a note here at the Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. Here's that title again, An Insider's Guide to the Kingdom. Our Canadian address is Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L1H7V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055. That's 1-800-872-0055. And please remember to include the call letters of this station. Now, here's Lonnie Malashenko.
Thanks, Ken. Well, Friday comes so quickly, and we're grateful that you've joined us this week. Ken and I want to invite you to make time this weekend for active fellowship in a Bible-believing Christian church near you. Our times together on the radio, precious as they may be, can never substitute, friend, for corporate worship as prescribed in God's Word. In fact, we'd love to invite you to join with us at a nearby Seventh-day Adventist church tomorrow morning. Tell them you're a special guest invited by Lonnie and Ken. Starting Monday, a brand new radio series entitled The Good Temper of God. We'll look forward to visiting with you again then. Until Monday, this is Lonnie Malashenko with Kenneth Richards, reminding you that it's always true. God loves you.
This is Seasonings, a quick look into the lives of men and women who made their world better or worse.
His father thought he was stupid. His first teacher said his mind was addled. Thomas Edison, after only 3 months of school, left and never went back. One day his mother bought him a book that was filled with scientific experiments that could be done at home, and the boy discovered his passion. His growing up days were spent in his laboratory. Often the family would hear muffled explosions coming from the basement. "He'll blow us all up," his father said. At 16, young Edison left home. From then on, Edison's life was filled with creating things, phonograph recording, motion pictures, an electric pen, the forerunner of the mimeograph, ticker tape machines. He held patents for more than 1,000 inventions. Before Hertz and Marconi, he even experimented with radio waves. But they didn't have a name, so he called them the etheric force. But Thomas Edison is most remembered for his experiments with electricity and the electric light. Not only did he invent the light bulb, but had to build the power plant and wiring to make it work. They called him a genius. His own answer, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration.